And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Yes! Grab your torch and dip it in to the already lit sexy St. Jeff candle. Because No Buffs is back, baby. I'm J.E. Skeets here on a Thursday night, along with two guys I would absolutely go to Rocks for.
We have I'm not going to Rocks!
Oh, we're going to Rocks. We got the bearded one, Trey Kirby. We got the other bearded one, super No Dunks producer, J.D.
Hello.
And we got a special guest joining us tonight to break down episode 3 of Survivor 42. You know him from Survivor Edge of Extinction, where he made it to day 38, the final four, and he's crashing this pod like he's the damn Kool-Aid man. It's Rick Devins.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Rick, how's it going, man?
Dude, I left my buff in the other room. I brought my beard inferiority complex, and I'm ready to roll with you guys.
Well, we really appreciate you jumping on here to discuss, again, episode 3, which I thought was an incredible episode. I know we've been talking about it all day here in the Classic Factory. I assume you thought that was a banger, too, and what's your just thoughts on this season so far?
I've really enjoyed this season so far. Like, this cast seems like it's just a lot of fun. I mean, kind of wacky, but in the best kind of way. Like, last night, from start to finish, maybe the worst overall gameplay ever for an episode. Like, just, like, scene by scene. But I think they're really trying to minimize the similarities to last season that people went against, and it's working out. I'm really enjoying myself.
I'm seeing, and I want to get your opinion on it, and I'm not saying I think this, but I saw some people in the Twittersphere saying there's some similarities between Daniel on this season to Rick Devins back in 38. Now, I think that was sort of blown up last night after that performance, like you said, from Daniel. But yeah, what do you, let's talk about the episode and talk about him. And are there any similarities at all?
You know, I thought when he started his speech, like, guys, I got this. I'm going, oh man, he's gonna make me proud. He's gonna Devins this tribal council. And then he did. I think it's kind of like, you know, in the NBA, you only compare white guys to other white guys.
Yes. Yep.
In Survivor, you only compared curly haired guys with glasses to other curly haired guys. Like, people compared me to Fishback. It's like, really? Like, could it possibly be further? So I think that's about what we have going for each other is curly haired. And he's a talker. I mean, I'll give him that. He's really entertaining.
Yep, he does. And we were saying right before we jumped on here with you, the three of us, JD, Trey, and myself, we watched the 20-minute Rick Devins highlight mixtape that's on YouTube. That's a thing that exists.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you've had a chance to see it, Rick, but yeah, the similarities
it.
Are
I,
like, you edited it. Oh wow, great job, great cutting.
No one else was gonna put that together.
No, it's amazing. And I mean it was only a couple seasons ago, I forgot how many idols you had and the big moves you were doing. But the similarities, yeah, with Daniel at least are like the gift of the gab, as Trey said. He's good at a confessional, as were you.
Thank you. I didn't really edit that together. That's, but yeah, he is. He's so much fun, but he's also just zany, man. I mean, losing. I know we're gonna go through it, but losing the idol, handing you the instructions for the idol straight from his boxer. like, that's not strong social game, Daniel.
Yeah, I guess that was what he kept in his drawers was the congratulations note that Mike then was like,
took it apart.
All right, no problem.
Hit some of it other places. Didn't give it all back together. It was crazy stuff. But if he's able to recover the way you were, Devin, he'll be looking all right. How hard is it to, you know, have a tough going at the beginning of Survivor and then get back on track and actually figure things out with the rest of your tribe?
You know, I think a lot of people are counting Daniel out. Like, oh, he had a bad night. He's done. He's smoked. But the thing about Survivor is every good thing you do is a bad thing because people look at it. Like, when you really look at it, Jonathan had the best night ever last night. And Daniel had the worst night ever. It's like, who's more likely to win?
Right.
You know, not Jonathan. He's going to get voted out right after the merge. But Daniel, it's like now he's kind of a wounded animal. If you're in his tribe, are you more likely to keep Daniel around, who's really strategic and a smooth talker and pulled off something great at that tribal? Or like this guy who kind of doofused it up and burnt all his bridges and really needs you and is feeling, you know, like a wounded animal in maybe not a backed against the wall way, but a help me sort of way. He might have done himself a favor in a weird way.
Yeah. Were you surprised at all that he didn't?
Or he might have sunk himself.
Oh, yeah. Well, we will see. Both are in play here. Were you surprised when they went to the revote that Daniel, you know, stuck to like sort of his guns at first, that we then had a tie again, and then we had to have the little, you know, unanimous decision had to come between him and High over who was going home? Like, were you shocked by that move by him? And then again, like talking it out, like how he opened the negotiations with High, basically telling him, well, here's how I'm going to start this. I'm definitely not going to rocks now. Let's go from there. Like, yeah, that was part of bad gameplay. But yeah, what, like that sort of decision by him, the whole thing, you were just as perplexed, I assume.
Oh, 100%, yeah. Skeets. I'm with you. Because you got to know that if you're not willing to go to rocks, either you hide that so that you at least have some leverage to trick this other person to see if they'll give. Or if you know, like, that's not even a possibility, then you're right. Just change your vote immediately. Or just immediately say, hey, Chanel, you know, I don't want to go to rocks. Let's the two of us join these two instead of throwing her under the bus.
Yeah, weird.
He really, it's like, if you're willing to give up Jenny, which he clearly was, then just give up Jenny. Instead, he blew it up with Chanel. He alienated Lydia and High, and Mike doesn't know what the heck's going on.
Yeah, and like my favorite part maybe of the whole tribal council, and I was so psyched, I mean, I think as Survivor fans, when you see there's 20 minutes left and you're at tribal council, you're like, oh yeah, here we go. Like, the fireworks are going to fly. They talked about the rice, there being none. They talked about Chanel's journey, you know, Shipwheel Island, the journey as they call it. But they're talking about the classic tribal lines will be drawn and all that. And then Daniel, out of nowhere, JD, suddenly just sort of goes, he starts talking about being in a state of paranoia. And then Probst follows it up with like, well, you know, who calms you out here? And Daniel like, well, those two people over there, names Mike, Chanel, in order. Mike, Chanel, then his mom, then his girlfriend. And now, Rick, like you know, like the editing can get slick with it, but we see the reaction from High, and it to us watching at home is like, whoa, what's going on here? I thought he was with us, and he's saying these are the two people that calm him, then his mom and his girlfriend. Like High seemed to have a read on obviously what was going on.
Yeah, Yale Law School had to be beating their head against the wall last night. Oh, no. It really, the whole thing was perplexing because, again, you know, you don't know what the edit is, so maybe that wasn't as jarring a thing, but it seemed like it was. Like, it almost seemed like he was trying to activate an idol. It was so out of left field.
Yeah.
Like, let me tell you why I'm not going to win. And then he even got it wrong why he's not going to win. There are other reasons you're not going to win, Daniel. But you're right. It's like he says, Mike, and then it's like you see it in his head, you almost see the wheel spinning, like, oh, that was a screw up. But before he can stop himself, he says Chanel. And then he's like, I know what I'm gonna do to cover this up. Like, my girlfriend, my mom. Yeah. And then Hi and Lydia are just going, oh my God, we're so sunk at that point.
Were you impressed with how Hi handled that tribal council? Like, I mean, he's learning on the fly that there's like suddenly two less votes, that Daniel, who he thought was with him and Lydia, has turned on him. And you know, then this idea of like we might go to rocks, that's being presented to him. He, for all that information overload, Rick, it felt like he sort of managed it pretty slick, like how he was like, Daniel, do you trust me? And he was like trying, you could see him trying to compute it all, trying to stay, you know, even keeled, and then try and make a decision there. And he really dug his heels in. He's like, well, I'm not going to switch my vote. So you guys are. And they did, or Daniel did, I guess.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. He really was confused and should have been at the votes. Like, he was doing a good job keeping track of the votes, doesn't get an answer about what's going on. So clearly, like, he's got to be just not having any idea. Like, his brain's got to be flying a million miles
and it's
second.
The first tribal council for them.
Yeah,
exactly. And then I'm pretty sure once it becomes a discussion between Daniel and Hi, like, Daniel's like, we definitely don't want to go to rocks. And I think Hi was kind of like, yeah, I agree with that. And I think he was almost, he could have been willing to let Lydia go initially, but I think he had such a good read on Daniel. And of course, Daniel comes up and says, definitively, I'm not going to rocks, that Hi just like crushed him. I mean, in a game of chicken, Hi hijacked it. And just made Daniel look. Look a fool.
Yeah, I thought it was like, I was catching Major Ricard vibes from Hi last night. Just the way he was like so observant of what was happening. He was kind of on to the fact that Daniel was in between the different voting blocks here, and he just knew something was up. So when something turned out to be up and he was keeping track of the votes, he's like, this doesn't make sense. And then he just knew. Once Daniel came out and kind of gave away his position, Hi knew where his position could be. Then Mike asked me, like, would you ever consider switching your vote? That's when he knew. He's like, I got him. Like, if I stick with it right here, I'm going to win this negotiation easily and come out ahead. They went into that tribal council on the bottom, right?
Yeah.
Him and Lydia. And they leave making the decision on top with Daniel kind of having to do whatever they want next week, because what else is he going to do? I thought that was super impressive.
And then the reason all of this maybe has had to happen was Chanel's decision on you know, Shipwheel Island, the summit, the journey, whatever you want to call it, Rick. Like, how shocked were you by that move where she tells Omer, I need my vote. Like, I got to keep it because they had already lost the challenge. We're going to tribal council. It's pretty slit. There's the split. There's these weird pairs. And then decides to risk it. What was more surprising, like that, or what then happened at tribal council? Because I think they're equally crazy.
They're both pretty crazy. What happened at tribal was even crazier.
Yeah.
The thing about the Chanel decision is the fact that she was so adamant, like, I need my vote. Like, she knew the situation very clearly.
Yeah.
And she knew which way it was going to go. But then she just went with it and gave it up. I would have been fine with it if she had said, I know that my vote could decide which way it goes tonight, but I also know that no matter what, it's not going to be me.
Right.
So screw them. I'm going to take my advantage. But she didn't do that. It just seems like she got caught up in the moment. And, you know, before each season, you spend a couple days in camp around each other, not in an actual camp, but like at Ponderosa, basically around each other. And you can't talk to each other, but you're there. And they have different people come and talk to you. And Jeff comes at one point. And one thing Jeff says is, like, this is your chance. Play this game like you're never playing it again.
Yeah.
Like, don't leave with any regrets. Play big. So I understand her going for the advantage because she thinks Omer is going to do something different. But not when you had just said, I need that vote. It's like you should have one or the other. You shouldn't be overpowering yourself.
I think that's right. Even I rewatched this today, and on Shipwheel Island, she says to us, or actually to Omer, I definitely can't lose a vote going into tribal tonight. Okay. But then she also says, and it comes up multiple times between the two of them, if we can both walk out of this thing with an advantage, I'm happy. And it's like, those contradict each other. Now, I understand they don't really know what the decision's going to be. They've heard it, like, secondhand. They have an idea, it feels like, with everybody coming back and telling them, and nobody can keep a secret anymore. But it was like, well, which one is it? Like, do you really need your vote and can't lose it? Or do you really want to try and get the advantage? But, I mean, I've never played Rick like you, but I know I would be like, they're telling me to risk, to go big, to like, you know, you just see that word risk and you're like, well, I'd rather do this than do nothing, right?
Yeah, but also at the same time, like, you bring up a really good point, which is the conversation with Omer. Like, she should know that she told him, I need my vote more than anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then you're in your head going, well, he's probably going to risk it. Like,
yeah,
because you told him that, you should know he's going to risk it. And then you're going, well, I really can't risk it now, because now I'm not just taking a risk. Like, I'm taking a risk that probably logically won't work out. So she really set herself up.
Yeah.
And Omer's got to be like, are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, for like, yeah, when he finds out. Yeah.
Like, he's got to be wondering if she screwed him on purpose at this point. It's so weird.
My only guess was that later on in the episode, after she's found out that she's not going to have the vote, is that she says, I can direct the vote without having a vote. So to me, it's like maybe she convinced herself that she had convinced Omer that, like, I'm keeping my vote, so maybe we'll both keep our votes. I don't know what it meant, but I can see her thinking that she talked him into something when she obviously didn't, and that's kind of what happened later on in Tribal Council as well. Rick, is it easy to convince yourself that you're in charge when you're out there? Is it easy to get, like, for people to fool you to think, like, oh, they ate it right up out there?
You know, I actually never fell into that trap because I never felt like I was in charge.
Right.
Early on, you know, in Manu, where I actually was on the right side of all the votes, it's like it was such a collaborative thing, and I did not want to be in charge, you know, pre-merge that early in the game. And then later in the game, it's like I was always just floundering, trying to do this. If I was in charge, it's because I knew what I had and what was going on, and they didn't. But it was never a sense of, like, I talked someone into this. Mm. The one time I did feel like I totally manipulated them, which was when Aurora went home, and I said I was going to play the thing for Julie. I believed that for months after the game that I manipulated them. When finally they convinced me that no, they were going to do it anyway. So.
What do you think, Rick, of the you know, these last two seasons with, at least in both of them, this journey, the Shipwheel Island, and the risk of vote and keep it, and the secret phrases, which I'm sure we'll get into, that we have another one last night. We saw the, we call it the Shillelagh of Time, but Erica smashing the hourglass. Like, are you a fan of these, like, new wrinkles to the game? Not a fan? Like some of them? Hate some of them? What do you think?
Really didn't like the hourglass.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think anyone liked the hourglass. The others, I wish, you know, I would take them one or two at a time. I think they really overloaded last season, and then because they filmed back to back, they couldn't correct that. I think they're kind of correcting it in editing. I mean, you know, Shipwheel Island took so much longer last season. Whereas this last one, it was so great. It's like we didn't have to see the stupid map up the hill. It's just like Omer going, that sucks.
Yeah, he was like, wow, that was a lot more tiring. Yeah.
Yeah, which was awesome. So, it had, and it's been, you know, this season's been better because it's played out differently. It's like we think we know how it's going to work, and then it doesn't. Oh, Two Shot in the Dark's already played.
Yeah.
Who knows if it could play. So, it's been fun. I think this season they've really, with the editing, concentrating more on the castaways and a little less on the twist. The twist have bothered me so much less.
JD, I want you to chime in here because you are a Survivor head. I know you're pressing a lot of buttons over there.
I'm pressing.
We got to talk to our guest, and he's the pro. But yeah, who impressed you the most last night in episode three? Is it High?
Jonathan.
Well,
impressed me
Jonathan.
The most.
Yes. Okay. Yes, he's a,
but yeah, High owned them. I mean, As soon as Daniel reveals his cards and basically, like, I'm not going to Roxy's, it was just very impressive game of chicken that you just love to see at a Tribal Council. Also, the supercut of High's reactions, I mean, they're amazing. Like, again, editing probably, but also just the eye rolls, the oh my god, like the where are the votes?
Then the one where it looks like his brain is going to explode.
This is not computing. There's six of us here and I'm only seeing two votes. What's happening here? I've loved it. I mean, top of the leaderboard right now for me, High is. And also, not only did he, you know, stare down death basically, he has a friend for life in Lydia, probably, because I'm willing to go to rocks for you. That is an ally that is not going to turn on you anytime soon, in my opinion. But Rick, what do you think about that? Just that sort of maneuver. Does it mean anything this early in the game for Lydia to be that loyal to Hai?
You know, there are some people that it wouldn't, like a Sandra. But I think for the large majority of people, certainly for me, and I think for Lydia, you're absolutely right. Like, if someone goes to rocks for me that early and takes that stand for me that early, I'm stupid loyal anyway, but I would definitely be stupid loyal for that person.
Oh, totally.
Heck yes. I'd be more than happy to take that on. And you're right. I think Lydia, especially because she doesn't seem like someone who's like, at this point, really comfortable at getting out and making these great relationships, she's going to cling to Hai even more. I think your read on Hai is just great, just amazing. You get distracted by Daniel exploding during tribal, but meanwhile, Hai's over here doing the exact opposite, taking himself from that really confused, out of the loop guy to, like you said, the top of his tribe. A guy who has a great moment on, you know, I say resume, but really nothing happening pre-merge matters.
Right.
Right.
On your final, for final
trial. Doesn't it though, in a 26-day game? Is it not? I guess not.
I don't think so. I think most people, when you get to there, it's like, if you had an impressive pre-merge, that means you voted all your people out and they're not on the jury anyway.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the people on the jury are like, I don't care what you did before I was there, because we all think we're the best. It's like, you were able to get me, good for you, but who cares what you did with those losers? You know, they couldn't even make the merge.
Yeah.
Like me, who went home, got voted out fourth. You know, no offense to anybody.
Another great moment for Hai, too, is Chanel returns from Shipwheel Island. Daniel quickly gets her up to speed on, like, what's been happening. She says right away, well, it's got to be Lydia. Mm-hmm. I don't have a vote. She does tell Daniel that. And then they come up with like the plan, like, well, we'll just split the vote. So we'll do, you know, we'll have some of us, we'll tell them, Hai and Lydia, really. Some of us, we'll have the boys vote for Mike. We'll have the girls vote for Lydia. And then we'll just screw them with math here. And then we have Hai telling Chanel, well, what about 3 votes on Jenny and 1 on Mike? And somebody says, I think it's her. What's the math there? And somebody, I think he even says, yeah, the math doesn't really make sense. But anyway, he does pick up Rick, Hai does, on sort of how aggressive Chanel is playing. And did you experience that on your season? Like, the idea of, like, you hear Rob and Tyson talk about Survivor being sort of like a poker game at times. It's like, you pick up on tells, and then when someone changes maybe how they're coming about something, you're like, whoa. That's not how they usually are. And Hai tells us, like, she's not really that aggressive, and suddenly she's bossing everybody around. And he seemed to think that was weird. Is that something that could happen?
I think that that's definitely something that can happen. You see changes in personalities all the time. Usually it's like you were talking about earlier. When people have something good happen to them, they just start feeling themselves, like they're controlling the game. Like, my good buddy Ron Clark on our season was like that. You know, when he was Hai, he was Hai. And then when he'd get his hand smacked, you know, he'd go back and cower a little bit. Then he'd build himself back up. But yeah, I think for Hai to be able to pick that up from Chanel speaks really highly of his game. And then I think it also, just the whole episode speaks to kind of the hubris of Daniel and Chanel. I think they clearly think they're a lot smarter than Hai and Lydia. Like, and the fact that they thought they could just convince them to do whatever they want. Chanel said, you know, I can run this. And then at Tribal, you know, Chanel thinks she can convince people that she had nothing to do with it. Like, she's willing to take zero responsibility. Whereas Daniel thinks he can give 100% responsibility and they're going to fall for it. Like, they just really seem to underestimate Mike and Lydia and Hai, of course. I don't think they underestimated Jenny, but Jenny was just a victim of circumstance.
Oh, I know. We haven't even said her name here. Poor Jenny. Like, God, to go home that way TK. That's like so early in the season. People were very high on her, going very far in this game. I think for good reason.
She was my winner pick.
Yeah, and then here she is, and there's no Edge of Extinction like Rick fortunately had to be the fourth one voted out. At least got a chance to come back, but she is gone.
Yeah, it looked like she was in a pretty good spot going into last night's episode. Then they go to Tribal Council. Looked like it was going to be okay there, but then she was in a situation where basically didn't even get to stick up for herself. I thought that was kind of strange, where you know the bottom two are there, and it's just everybody else is figuring out your fate, and you just have to be like, well, we'll see what happens here. But Rick, I was curious, is the hubris like the hardest thing to control about yourself? I'm thinking about the moment you had when you got back in the game with War Dog in the jungle, and he's like, hey man, it's gonna be great for you, you're gonna come back and work for us, and you're like, yeah, it's a great idea, and I'm never gonna do it.
<So good. laughs>
An all-time great moment, but it really goes to show you, like, when you're in charge, it seems like you can be really blind to everything that's going on with the people trying to get themselves off the bottom.
Yeah, it is. It, you know, I suffer from it my own way, not because I was controlling the game, but there were definitely times where I started winning challenges where I was feeling myself and I was like, these suckers can't. And you need that, you know? It's like the NBA. Like, if you really believe that you're going to whoop somebody, like, your chances of whooping them are a lot better.
Yeah.
But it's not like that strategically. It's strategically when you start thinking that you're that much smarter or that much better, like that's exactly when you're going to get clocked. Like, you need a healthy set of paranoia. And you also, you know, the best players are the ones that are, well, I guess even when you're doing it from behind the scenes, you can be in your interviews feeling yourself. But yeah, I think it's just a lot harder to control the game strategically than it is to win challenges, because everyone knows they need control of that game. And when you start feeling yourself for being in control of the game, other people know you've been controlling the game.
Yeah.
Like, if you're legitimately like, maybe you're a goat going to Final Tribal and everyone's laughing at you behind your back. But the people who are legitimately controlling the game, most of the time, like, it's pretty obvious, and that just puts a target on you.
Right.
So as soon as you start feeling yourself is also the same moment that you've become a target.
One more question with the Final Tribal Council, and then we got to talk about Thor and Jonathan and that amazing immunity challenge. Rick, put yourself in either really High or Daniel's shoes. It doesn't really matter, but you're this early in the game. Suddenly, there's these missing votes, and we're going to Rocks, or the possibility of going to Rocks, I guess I should say. Are you doing it? Like, or are you going to do, like, what Daniel did? Like, ultimately, like, all right, it's not me, and I'm not pulling one out of four rocks out of a bag and possibly going home. Like, is there any way you're doing it that early in the game, especially?
It's, you know, it's really interesting because my instinct now is someone is like, no, right. That's just so early in the game. I know how quickly things can change.
Yep.
But looking back at my own game, if it had been David...
Yep.
If David had been Jenny, there's no doubt in my mind I'd go to Rocks. Like, I never would have betrayed David. You know, stupid loyal, but I wouldn't have done it. And I probably wouldn't have done it with a couple people that ended up coming after me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it might not have even been a strategic move. But then later in the game, I wanted to go to Rocks with Ron and Julie and Victoria and David. And I was so ready to go to Rocks, but that's because we were at a point in the game where it's like whoever had the majority, it was that big of a moment. Whereas that was not what was happening last night.
Yeah,
so
makes more sense when it's down to the final five. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's when you're at the final five, sure. When you're in the first tribal council, it's like I would like to keep playing. And I'm sorry, Jenny. I'll see you later.
Especially when you're high, like. You know they're missing their votes, but you don't know why.
Yeah.
So you could go to Rocks, get one of them out, and then you're still in the minority. You know, it's like you still didn't help yourself.
Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, it was 25% chance if they had gone to Rocks that it's him that goes home.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I did like when Daniel asked, I think it was the first question actually, he asked Jeff, so hold on, there are four Rocks here. I know there's only two of us really deciding, but there are four Rocks, right, if we go? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, okay, well, I'm not going to Rocks.
Yeah.
It's like, even 25%? Nope, I'm not doing it.
You just don't want to be the first
one
to say
that question
it.
Didn't matter at all.
Yeah, yeah, like if it was 50%, he's definitely not going to. He would have just like, nope.
Oh, two? All right, let's see. Flip a coin.
Let's talk about Jonathan in the immunity challenge. I mean, everybody's asking, Rick, and I'll ask you the same thing. Was that the greatest like performance we've ever seen, at least in a team challenge.
You know, I do want to give a shout out to Nasir, because we have short memories.
Wow.
Like, Nasir carried his tribe, who was trying to throw it.
Good point.
To a challenging, but I do think last night was more impressive. I cannot remember a single performance that was that good. I mean, he won it for his tribe and then also went back and rescued them. It was unbelievable. The guy is ridiculous. While two other tribes, entire tribes, couldn't even do it.
Yeah, that's
he did it on his own. So, yeah, I think that is the single most impressive individual performance in a team challenge. And it might not need all those qualifications. You might just say performance.
Like, yeah, it was true. Yeah. That's because he did it. He legit did everything. Like
he made the bags. That was the crazy part. Like, he made the bags right away.
He dove down to get the key, the first one. Yeah. He obviously carried the ladder. Like Rick said, he was going back and just picking people up. He's throwing them at one point, like skipping them like a stone over to the spot where they'd be. Then he holds the ladder, though. Let's give some credit to Lindsay for showing some pretty good balance,
balance.
Well, just Jonathan, like, basically held the ladder by himself, but she, like, scurried up there, and, like, some people are going to slip and fall off. So that was pretty impressive. And then he nails all five sandbags in a challenge where Rick also said, Probes has to be like, hold on. They might be drowning. They're never going to do this. The water's only getting choppier and more aggressive. So let's just bring everybody in. That's, of course, never happened. Rick, do you think Probst made the right call there, though? And it was, some people are saying not a fair call, that maybe they should have both gone to Tribal Council, but what do you think?
That's the thing I do want to just real quick remind everyone, like, if Jonathan wasn't in this challenge, we would all think it was an impossible challenge.
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's true.
We'd all be like, wow, no one could have ever done that challenge. But now, because of Jonathan, I'm like, I bet about 90% of tribes in the history of Survivor would have been fine. But I do believe that these are very physically not gifted tribes.
Okay.
I love it.
But that being said, I do a podcast called Surviving Snyder. We talk Washington football and Survivor. It's very neat. But I do it with Dalton Ross of Entertainment Weekly. So he actually talked to Probst. And you have video. If you see the current, they actually showed a clip where Jenny's swimming against the current and there's stuff like flying across the screen. I think it was a really rough situation. He said they were out there 22 minutes or so before they called it. So if you're really treading water for 20, like Keith on my season might have drowned.
Yeah. That's what my wife watching it last night was like, has anybody ever drowned? Like, she's like sort of a casual fan. She's like, she watches it when I'm watching it. Has anybody ever drowned? I'm like, no. And she's like, that could happen here, right? And I'm like, I mean, I know they've got safety, like divers and all that, but like, there are many times where like people
scary
are just like
moments
trying to keep their head above water and salt water coming in your mouth. Like you said, you're exhausted. When I walk on the beach for 5 minutes, I'm tired, right?
You know? Yeah, right. And I think I saw in an article today that Jenny was saying in her head, like, don't yell for help, don't yell for help. Like, they were panicking, but they don't want to get voted out. It's like they're still playing the game out there. You saw Chanel holding on to the pole.
Just
like
resting.
Yeah.
Don't tell me she wasn't a little freaked out. I would have been.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so do you think it was the right call to ultimately bring them in? They were at the same point, too, it felt like.
Yeah.
Like, the latter point, they were never going to do it.
I think, you know, what I love about it is they showed it. They didn't try to BS us about it or anything. You know, it's like, it was messed up. They showed it so we can all judge the tribe, and I can call them less physical. And in fairness, it's like the other tribe kicked their butts and was safe, so I think it was totally fine. I had no problem with it. I thought it turned out a lot more entertaining this way than it would have been if it run smoothly.
Yeah. The only other option was having Jonathan be like the all-time QB for both teams. They're like, all right, well, you got to go out there, hold theirs as well. Bring them all in. All the dream team is now unemployed. They're like, well, we just got Jonathan now. He just does everything.
You know what he should have done? Because Probst loves this type of stuff. Jonathan should have been like, hey, Jeff, if I go out there and help one of these tribes, can I get their fruit too and their toolkit too?
We'll take the fruit and the fishing gear.
Just like propose that to Jeff, see what he would have done.
Dude, I bet Probst would have been all over.
Oh, yeah. He would be like, absolutely. We can play the superhero music a little bit longer while you're out there. It's great.
I could be a hero, baby.
I also would have been hilarious if when Probst sort of says, okay, you guys are basically drowning, come on in, and then goes, all right, here's what I'm proposing. We'll just go get the keys, and we see, like, the dream team, like, go get them. They got a little, like, fishing pole almost to get them down. And then, you know, so Probe says, we'll do that, and then we'll start again. Does that sound fair? Would have been so funny if somebody that's, like, basically been drowning for 20 minutes, like, no.
Yeah.
Nope.
We're going.
We're still going. And just, like, really hold Jeff's feet to the fire and be like, no, we're not done. You're the one that stopped it. We didn't say anything. But they were obviously like, yeah, okay, let's just go throw some sandbags. I think we could do that.
Totally.
And Roxroy, I thought, did pretty well on the sandbag toss. Though, yep. Rick, I mean, this gets edited, like, it can get edited a ton. I'm always wondering, like, how many shots were thrown there on these bags?
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. Who knows? I was the beneficiary of some great editing.
Oh, really?
On my season, yeah. It was the second challenge. Where we carried the big snake, it ended in a big ring toss onto the paddles that flip and spell. And myself and Chris Underwood and Keith were all doing that.
Okay.
And Keith and I sucked. We both, like, couldn't hit anything. It was awful. And they didn't show me at all. Oh. I was sitting at home watching, and I was so happy. Because I just sucked. And then later in the season, I nail a ring toss. And it ended up winning the challenge, so they had to show it. So I'm just like,
one for one. Yeah, exactly.
But I'm sure there were a lot more misses than we saw, a lot more close ones than we saw. Yeah, for sure.
I'm always, like, fascinated. I wish, I said this to Trey right before we jumped on, like, I wish as Survivor sickos, they would just, like, post the entire challenge somewhere on, like, YouTube, and we could just go watch it and,
like,
see
the all 22 footage.
Yeah, and see how many misses there are and stuff like that. But
they could get so many Paramount Plus subscriptions.
Exactly.
They just threw all this stuff up there for sure.
It's a no brainer to me. The idea, though, like you said in yours, like, you were struggling. It's like, when do you, like, go, all right, somebody else swap try, in. Or when does somebody else go, let me try? I find, like, that dance interesting.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. When I was missing him, I was just waiting for Chris to say, let me just thank you. Thank God. And then I didn't put myself back in again. It's like, oh, you're tired. Oh, okay. I guess I'll try it. No. And then when you're feeling it, it's like, it always makes me laugh. I think it happened last night. Like, someone nails, like, five of them. And then someone's like, I'll take over.
Yeah.
It's like, why?
Why?
It's even if you get that hero moment, they saw the first five. Like, we're not stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the strategy? Is it more of a flip, like a finger roll? Or some people are shooting more of a jump shot?
Shooting the jumper, yeah.
Yeah, I never threw the sandbag. I don't know. I would say, look at what War Dog's doing and do the opposite.
Good call. Okay, we're almost going to take our first break, but a couple more things about the episode. Then we have a bunch of great questions sent in by the No Buffs community and some of the No Dunks fans as well about last night's episode for you, Rick, and then even about some of your season. We had Marianne. We get, like, Taku coming back after who the heck just went home last week? Remind me. Can't keep track. Two up, one episode ago.
Who was it?
I know.
Mariah.
Thank you.
That's right.
Mariah, you're on fire. Marianne tells the small tribe, like, there's only like four of them left, that she's got an extra vote. And then they do this whole group hunt thing, Rick, where for, like, an idol, they find the beware advantage. She does. And we get the whole phrase. Was that ever a thing on your season? Like, the group idol hunt? And, like, what's your feelings about that?
There was a group idol hunt. It's a big thing because no one wants to go off looking for idols at the beginning of the game when you don't think you're your target or not.
Yeah.
So I remember in Manu, we said, you know, no one wanted to sneak off, but everyone wanted an idol. So it's like, yeah, let's do a group hunt. And all of you in your heads are like, if I find it, I'm going to sneak it in my pocket as quick as I can.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to tell anybody. Like, David and I are hunting together going, I bet Kelly already has it. Like, she's making us look stupid. And I think Lauren already did have it. But yeah, the group idol hunts are just basically a really transparent way of everyone to be like, you're not going to get in trouble if you look right now, you know? You can't just point the target on, although you're still pointing and putting the target on people even as you're doing it. So it is a big thing. But, like, again, I don't think Marianne was even trying to hide it. She is all of them are way too open about their advantages. But Marianne takes it to, like, the next level of openness. And for someone who's seen all but six episodes of Survivor, the mysterious token Team Six, you would think that she would be a little more careful.
Yeah. I don't think she can help herself. Or so actually, exciting. Not just her. It seems like a lot of them in the last couple seasons. Like, you find
something. And I love her so much. I'm yelling at the screen, like, stop. Help me help you.
I thought she did a pretty slick job with the secret phrase.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
totally.
It's another classic case of the bunny rabbit having dinner in the mailbox. And then she asked Jeff, you know what I mean, right? He's like, not really. And then she like went on to explain sort of what it meant, even though she didn't. But everyone's like, okay, that's, I guess, just Marianne.
I was cracking. It's like when they say, you know, you can tell someone's lying if they, you know, if they add on to it. It's like when you tell a lie, just as few facts as possible. Miriam's like, I have a 5-minute story.
I've been thinking about this a little bit.
And I love the way Jeff blew her off, because that's the way he blows off stupid comments. Like, that was totally, and as a king of stupid comments, I got it a lot. So, yeah, he played along really well.
Oh, that's funny. There was a part where people on Twitter I have seen, too, with the idea that Mike doesn't say it.
He doesn't say
his phrase.
He just looked over.
And you know, he explains to us, like, you know, I'm waiting to see if the third tribe says it. But there's some blowback, Rick, I don't know how deep into the weeds you are, about, like, what the actual note says.
Actual,
like,
fine print talk.
Yeah. And, like, do you have to say it? Because I guess Xander did, from what we've learned since season 41, is that he sort of did have to keep saying it and was forced to by production. But maybe they've changed that. And I guess the other twist, too, now, and Mike tells us, is if this doesn't happen, if it's not unlocked by the time, I believe, they're merged, then these idols are just... They're good to go. And there's the entire note. I mean, we're showing it to everybody. We're not going to read the whole thing. The part about the idols sort of becoming powerful if they're not used is right at the bottom. But yeah, I mean, what do you make of this, Rick? Is it too much?
Well, it's a lot. It's definitely a lot. But I have seen what you said, where it says you must say the phrase.
Yeah.
And if I'm out there and I read that, I might not even ask the producers for clarification. Like, it seems pretty clear, like, oh, I have to say this.
Yeah.
So I do feel like the other player, like, Marianne's at a disadvantage because she's playing by the rules, and Mike and these others are not. But that, you know, I don't blame Mike. I think the producers have to do something. Although, if you think he's going to say it at the first one and then he doesn't, I don't know what you do.
Yeah.
Like, does Jeff stop the action like he did at the in Final Tribal and say, you guys have to reveal yourselves? I almost feel like he should have to do that, because it says beware, right?
Yeah.
And if you're not bewaring anything, then it's not beware. It's just a good thing.
Yeah. He seemed to.
Especially
sort of,
if he had not told people about it.
Yeah, for sure. If he just sits on it, then you're right. And then it becomes powerful, I guess, at the merge. And that was something that didn't happen in 41. So that is one tweak. I think they just, you know, if they were not all activated, then they were sort of just nothing.
Yeah.
If I have that right.
But Rick, isn't there like a crew with you when you're finding this advantage? And isn't there a producer to say, hey, you might want to read, see where it says you have to say this? That means you have to say this. Is that not part of the gameplay? Or do they just let you make the mistake and let you flounder if that's what is going to happen?
You know, I think that very well could happen. And in this situation, I would think if they cared about it, they would know going into the challenge that Daniel had told him not to say it.
Yeah,
right.
And that he wasn't going to say it.
Yeah.
And at that point, definitely, I would expect them to come in and say, hey, you read it again. You have to say it.
Right.
Now, there's
like, I don't know where I put it.
Exactly.
I was gonna check,
but that's the only thing I can see happen is, like, Mike's so all over the place that, like, maybe they thought he was gonna say it and then he didn't, and afterwards it was too late. It's like, what do we do now? Let's just roll with it. So maybe that happened, but I don't know. If I was Mike, as soon as I got pulled away from my interviews, I'd be peppering them with questions.
Right
And sometimes they say, we can't, you know. No. And other times they're like, oh, you know, it's, you know, they explain, like, it has to be like this.
So did you do that a lot, Rick? I mean, you found a lot of idols and you had a lot of these weird things.
Yeah.
Were you always, like, saying, okay, what can I do? What can I do? What does this mean? What is this?
Constantly. And most all the time, they're just like, figure it out. You know, we can't tell you. But other times, you know, there's some stuff I really wanted clarification on. Like, when I played Ron's fake idol.
Yep.
And then played my real idol. I didn't know if I could do that. Like, I had to be very clear. Like, if I play this fake, that's not it, right?
Right.
I still have a chance to play this other one. And they're like, yeah, yeah. You know, if you don't know that going into it, you can blow your whole game up.
Sure.
Right.
So stuff like that. And then, like, you know, go up when I got the idol out of the tree in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. Like, that's something I warn producers about during the day. You know, yeah. I go up to them and I'm like, I'm going to go ask him when it's time for the challenge. And I go up and I'm like, tonight's the night. Like, be there. Do not miss this. So you have chances to talk with him. And I would think that this would have come up.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And it's the second challenge, right? That he hasn't said it.
Two chances. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Are you surprised that he's okay not voting? Like, not having his vote for now two episodes going into a third? That to me is like, maybe that's what's sticking out.
Yeah.
It's like, we put it on there. Like, there is a penalty.
There
for
is
him.
A penalty. Yeah,
you
when
can't
you put
vote.
It that way, yeah.
You want to be
yeah.
able to vote.
Yeah.
But he's like, I don't maybe have any power and I can't vote, but I don't have to admit I don't like that I like soccer.
Yeah.
Right.
That's like the big advantage.
He just
like, I will not say it.
The No Kicks podcast, not happy at all.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll see. Maybe now, after obviously what happened, they go to tribal council.
Yeah.
He doesn't know where he yeah. sits in this tribal. He might
probably
be,
should get a vote.
The first thing he's going to say is, sucker makes me cry, Jeff. Oh, my God. So, yeah, we'll see you next episode. Okay, let's take our first break. And when we come back, we'll get into tree mail. We got lots of great questions from the No Bus community. Don't go anywhere, people.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, back with No Buffs here in the Classic Factory on a Thursday night talking to Rick Devins from Edge of Extinction fame. And Rick, you got on, you showed us right before we went live, you gotta tilt your hat down a little bit, but you have an Atlanta Hawks corduroy hat. Man, that thing pops, it looks great. You said there's a story to this. What is it?
Yes, well, since we're talking wardrobe, I do want to throw in a little tidbit for your sponsor, Indochino.
Yep.
I used to be a news anchor, and I got a clothing allowance as part of that.
Yep.
I've got like 5 Indochino suits.
Wow.
The suit I was wearing at the finale, Indochino.
Whoa.
Personalized, says Survivor Edge of Extinction.
Hey.
My beautiful inner lining.
Wow.
Big Indochino fan.
Oh, amazing. I hope we got to get you you got to use our
gotta
code
get you a
first
promo
off.
Code.
Yeah.
I used the code I got from a podcast, so I can't use it. I'm going to use this one now.
Nice.
Sorry, Tony Kornheiser.
Yeah.
it's no dunks now.
Awesome. Well, that's good to hear. So what's the story behind the hat?
Okay, so Tyler Fredrickson, who Survivor faithful will know as the redhead from season 30, the Dirty 30,
yep,
is a buddy of mine, and he sent me this hat randomly, and he was like, you'll probably recognize it, you'll know the story. And I looked at it, and I was like, that is a really ugly Atlanta Hawks hat. Yeah. But this was last year during the playoffs, so I was rocking it everywhere, you know, go Hawks. And I kept asking for hints, and he kept giving me hints about why I would know this hat. It turns out this same hat, well, not this exact one, but a corduroy Atlanta Hawks hat was worn by one of the main characters, not Kevin Bacon, in Tremors. And Tyler, for some reason, thought I would know that.
Oh, my God. You know, I think I've tweeted that before, that I was watching it and saw a Hawks hat.
Wow.
And I'm almost positive there's a tweet where I was like, oh, that's random. Yeah, that's definitely. I'm looking over Trey's shoulder.
Wait, this is your tweet.
That's my tweet. Yeah.
Watch a bit of Tremors last night. Don't judge me. Check the Atlanta Hawks
that's
hat.
That's amazing. It's the identical hat. You're right.
There you go.
Wow. That's actually crazy. Amazing. Tweet's almost 10 years old, man.
Incredible. Okay.
So, Tyler Fredrickson, thank you so much for this incredibly thoughtful, strange gift.
Yeah. And so you are a noted ETL fan, right? I mean, your Team Falcons, your Team Hawks, or all that?
I am a Braves fan. I'm a Hawks fan, but I was born a Washington fan.
That's right,
before
that's right.
I moved down here. Yeah, okay. Washington football fan.
Braves and Hawks. And how you just started a new job? Is that correct? Director of communications at the school there? That's on your shirt.
That's right. Middle Georgia State University here in Macon. Go Knights! I tried to put off the real world and real work for as long as possible. Thank you, Sia. But I had to go back to work, and this is like a dream job. It's right here in Macon. It's a beautiful campus. So prospective students, come let's talk survival.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Middle Georgia office State University.
Nice. What are you saying? There's a survivor class?
I'm saying I have an office. Just come by.
Just do this. What we're doing here.
But if they want a master's class in Survivor, I'll bring in guest speakers. Wendell Holland is visiting.
Nice. Okay. Well, speaking of that Sia money,
of beautiful table, guys.
Oh, yes, from our guy.
Love
Wendell.
Your beautiful table.
Yes, I think
Wendell's,
I forget what day it was. He's undergoing surgery, ACL surgery, I think he was. Remember, he had the basketball injury.
Yeah, that's right.
So hopefully he's doing all right. We're hoping to have Wendell on one of these No Buffs episodes coming up. But we got Rick right now. Let's get to Tree Mail and fire some questions at Rick, JD. Yeah, a little Tree Mail. Send in your questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. Throw No Buffs up in the header, or you can tweet at us at nodunksinc, or of course you can leave them in the YouTube comments below this video. Okay, first one. As a former Sia Money winner, Rick, who is the front runner for that prize this season, if it still happens? And what advice would you give to those who want to win it? The sea of money. So this is from @MightyStubaca. Can you explain for maybe, like, because we do have some new sort of fans to Survivor by way of the podcast that we do, the basketball podcast. The sea of money. What is, just for someone that's new to this, what does that mean?
100%. So Sia, the international pop star from Australia, you know, I want to swing from the chandelier.
Yep.
Is a huge Survivor fan. She and Probst are tight. She loves the show, obsessed with Cochran apparently. And I think the first season she ever did it was Ty's first season.
Yeah, I think you're right.
When he was looking after Mark the Chicken all season, because I think C is a vegetarian.
Yep.
And so she rewarded him at the finale with just a big check. And then she did it again for Donathan on Ghost Island, and she did it again for Davey Rickenbauer.
Yep.
And so it became like expected. And then she gifted me with like a really nice gift, which was outstanding. And I'm not, has she done it since?
Yeah, that's the thing. I feel like she has stopped doing it.
Well, sure, they're just not talking about it, because the reunion shows aren't live studio different affair reunion anymore. So
it's a that's good point. True. Good point. So yeah, you might be the last Sia winner for what we know.
So,
right. Yeah.
And so she's traditionally given it to people who are like really nice with animals. Or I kind of broke the mold of everything, because not that I was mean to animals. I love the chickens. But this season, it's complicated. I would say High really went for that Sia money.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think he was thinking about Sia when he was doing his old crab thing.
Yeah, totally.
But I think Marianne is easily the front runner for the Sia money.
Okay.
Because I think what Sia really wants is just someone who's, like, authentically a nice person having fun. And I think when she gave me the money, I'm confident that, like, she talked to production and was like, is he a nice guy? Because I loved production so much. Like, I think that played into it.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah. I think Marianne is the front runner.
Okay. Yeah, I've compared Marianne to Rupert. Like, and
tell me more. I mean
that positively. I think you're spot on with that. Just like, they're one of ones.
Honestly,
they're just so excited to be there, both of them. I'm talking, like, you gotta remember Rupert, the first time he's on camera, you can't take your eyes off him. You're like, who is this
guy? Huge fan favorite.
Just this crazy character. And as the times he came back, I think he started to, like, wear on some people. And he was a bit of a one-note player when it came to Survivor 2. He didn't, you know, wasn't, you know, flexing his strategic chops by any means. But that Marianne's a great pick, or high, I think. Do you have anyone else, Trey, that you would?
You might have nailed it even more with the Rupert thing by, like, someone who people at home love, but it's hard to be on the island with.
I think so. Yeah, for sure. Is there anyone else, Trey, that you could?
Does Jonathan have a chance?
Huh.
I mean, you know, like, he seems to be a nice guy aside from just being an incredibly strong physical player as well. And, like, I don't know, he seems very gracious in every interaction with everybody. And, you know, he did save some lives out there a little bit.
Yeah. And he probably won't win, too.
It doesn't feel like he'll probably win. Like, that's a question I would have for you, Rick. How does he possibly avoid being the first guy voted out when it comes to the merge? Everybody's going to say, look at this physical threat.
Yeah.
We don't stand a chance.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I posted about that online, and a lot of people are like, oh, but, you know, so many of the things are puzzles. You know, he might not be good at that, you know, so maybe people won't go after him. But, I mean, he literally can't hide behind anybody.
Yeah.
He's just he's never going to slip your mind. Yeah. You know, if he gets to the end, he's going to win just because it's so amazing he got to the end.
Yeah.
So, no, I think he's one of those where you're just like, thank you so much for dragging me here to the merge. You know, goodbye.
Yeah.
And that doesn't say any, like, I don't think there's anything he can do. If he does, it'll be great, because I'm rooting for him. He seems to have a really good social game, although the preview next week, maybe it's not as strong as it looks right now. But, like, I think he's doing everything right. He's just so impressive.
Yeah.
Well, he could feed people. He's got fishing gear now.
He's going to start doing that here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On a season where there's no food. And he could go and literally win every challenge because, as you say, Rick, it's not an impressive bunch in the physical department. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but the people, like, countering Rick are sort of right, too. These are a lot of puzzles now. It's not like who's just the strongest.
But if he finds some idols, I just think it's a tougher road for him than anybody else in the game.
Yeah. And he's likable.
Totally.
Like, remove all of the physical attributes, he seems like an extremely likable guy.
And that's true. If he was a jerk, he'd probably have a lot better chance.
So, but he also, and I'm just going to also throw this out.
All right.
He's got this bond with Omer, and they're an odd couple, and those alliances seem to go far in this game. And if Omer uses him as a meat shield, and then Jonathan has the sense to get rid of him at the exact right time, which I think he's capable of doing, I don't know. I like Jonathan's chances to make it deep into this game. Okay. But,
and, you know, if I had to jump on your bandwagon, I would say if he keeps Marianne, I don't think she'll stab him in the back.
Yeah,
right.
Like, maybe he could have her and Omer watching his back, and I'd love to see it.
The Go Train Alliance.
That's right. Yes. Omer and Marianne. Toronto connection there. All right. Next one here from at Doug Gulasi. He sends in a lot of great questions. This one by way of Twitter. If you could choose any season of Survivor to skip 6 episodes of, like Marianne and Token Cheens, which would you pick and why? That's a good one. Devins, what do you think there? If you had to pick one Survivor season, 6 episodes, what are you dipping out on?
That's really tough. You know, if you go back and watch season 1, it's so slow compared to these days that you could skip 6 and still not be lost. But it's, you know, it's the best because it's the first.
Yeah.
So I would say season 39.
Okay.
I mean, come on. Let's take that middle part and act like it never. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to protect. I don't want to say anything else.
Yes.
Season 39.
I think a lot of people would be picking that one. That's I saw people tweeting that for sure. All right. This one's interesting. Back to Mike here.
Do you guys have any idea which 6 episodes or why Tokens? Do you have theories?
Well, so I was listening to The Pod Has Spoken, which is, of course, Tyson. from, you know, winning Blood versus Water, and he was on that one with Fishback and stuff, and he was, so they were making fun of him that maybe she loved Tyson. She would have been very young, I guess, at that point, but she loved Tyson, was watching it, and then when he got voted out, she's like, I'm done with this.
Turn it off.
So that was the one theory. Though the other theory was she only started watching it after he got voted out. But no, yeah, it's
we
weird.
We need to know which six. Middle six, first six, end six.
It could
six,
be scattered. Seven, it could be, you know, throughout the, she just missed randomly six because
she had like soccer practice every other
exactly.
week.
Exactly.
Yeah, but she's year. Like, okay, she's obviously a super fan. She's right. seen every other episode. You don't seek out those six.
As someone... who plays Fortnite with Fishback every Thursday? We're playing tonight.
Nice.
He can be wearing. I can see just checking out.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Just over it. It's possible. What a fascinating thing to say. She is amazing. All right, next one here from Ryan Barry. Mike's position is pretty interesting. Let's go back to Mike. He's in a minority, but his ongoing lack of vote reduces his pre-merge threat level. Is he safer voteless? That's sort of what we were alluding to. Mm-hmm. Assuming his idol doesn't get activated next episode, what do you do with a Mike on your tribe? What's Mike's next move? So yeah, what do you think of Mike's position here, Rick, on this tribe of now five?
Mike is in a really weird spot because, yeah, if I'm, you know, Lydian High, Mike is definitely my preference to work with versus Chanel or Daniel at this point. Yeah. And he's like the person who sent the tree mail said, he's less threatening because he doesn't have a vote. So that's great.
Yeah.
But the problem is that you're two people and then Daniel and Chanel are two people, even if they're mad at each other. So if Mike doesn't have a vote, you're in trouble. You need at least Daniel or Chanel to give you the majority, which makes Mike already not your priority. So I don't think Mike's in a great spot. And then when he does get his vote back, doesn't that mean he'll also have an idol? Mm-hmm. So yeah. So then he becomes a threat in a way. So I don't know. Mike's in a rough spot. I feel like the only thing he has going for him is that he doesn't have his vote. And then that's also could be a bad thing in the circumstances that tribe's in right now.
I 100% agree with you. I think if this green tribe goes back to a tribal council, let's say in the next episode or soon, Daniel is going to be, I mean, he's basically forced his hand that he has to, like, now that, hi, whatever you want to do, let's do it. And he will, I think, serve up on a platter voting out Mike. He talked about it in this episode with the whole, like, let's see the fine print and all that. Okay, oh, maybe we do keep him around because of this idol whole thing. But he's going to be like, anybody but me. I mean, that's how he's going to play and mm-hmm. probably how he should at this point. I think it'll be Mike over Chanel. I actually think that's what he would present to High and Lydia. Do you
right.
agree?
Yeah, because you will know as soon as he knows, you're going to know that he's getting an idol back and he's getting his vote back. So either he has to activate it at the very next immunity challenge, which means then that Marianne has to say her piece and they have to get the other piece said as well, or he's going to be on the chopping block. You would have to think, just because it's like he can't do anything, and then as soon as he can do everything, everybody knows. So
yeah.
he's in a tough spot. Right here, but I mean, he's burned less bridges. You know, I think probably socially he's ranked higher than Daniel and Chanel are, but not having a vote is pretty bad.
Yeah, but will Mike put up the fight, let's say, between Daniel, if it's him and Daniel, to all the other ones on this tribe, especially High and Lydia, and then Chanel's in this mix here, but like, is he going to be like, no, we got to vote Daniel out. He's the one that's flip-flopping around here. He can't be trusted. He might.
Yeah.
He might, but I also like, I don't know, he just... Does he do that? Is that his type of
doesn't
vibe?
Doesn't seem honorable.
Doesn't seem like it, yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing with Mike is you just don't know what his relationship has been with High and Lydia.
Yeah.
Like, has he made any effort with them, or did he just feel so secure in his alliance? Because if I'm Lydia and High, and he hasn't, from the get-go, made any effort for me, plus he had this secret, then I might just go with a wounded Daniel, you know, versus him.
Yeah, I think so. I heard Jenny talk to Rob Cesarino on her exit interview today, and she said she tried to build a bond with Lydia especially, and that went nowhere.
Hmm.
And this is according to Jenny. Like she would always like just get up and leave. So if that, if you know, if which is never a good sign.
Z.
Yeah.
Six people.
See you later. But if Jenny is linked so tight with Mike, then I think we've been led to believe, at least what Rick is saying, like, that he probably is not all that tight with High or Lydia.
Didn't seem like
no,
it. It seemed like there was two and two with two in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. All right, next one here from Adam in Las Vegas. Hey, guys, since this season's contestants have not seen season 41, someone from this season could falsely claim that another contestant appeared on 41 and rally their tribe mates to vote them out. This seems like something Sandra or Boston Rob could smoothly pull off, but I wonder if all of you think anyone could pull it off from this season, and if so, who could they do it to? Like, who would they target? Thanks, guys. Love the show. So this is, like, galaxy brain thinking here from Adam. And I guess, like, it's a difficult question, I think, Rick. It's, like, it's such a hypothetical. But, like, I love the idea of, like, I know I say this all the time here on this show. Like, if I ever go on there, I'll have all these lies. You know, like,
yeah.
I'll lie about this, I'll lie about that. And I think it's so easy to say and then try to actually do is a whole other thing. From your experience, is like, am I on to something there? Like, yeah, you might think all these grand plans and you may act a different way, but you really won't probably when you're out there and you're just stripped to the bare minimum.
Yeah, that's such a funny lie. Can you imagine?
I know.
If you're the person that's being targeted and someone comes up and they're like, did you play on 41?
Like, what?
Do I look like I just got off an island? Like, you know, it would have to be like Zach or Romeo or someone who's already very skinny, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
No, I mean, logistically, the lie just, it could never happen.
Right.
Especially this season where they needed like 2 weeks to quarantine.
Right. Sure.
There was even overlap and stuff. And then it's like, are the camera people and producers really that amazing that there's no recognition? You know? Like, they could do that. I mean, they're an amazing crew. I think you'd be better off saying that someone was like Tony's nephew or something
yeah.
like that.
You
know, something
Ooh,
that's harder to verify.
That's good. That's good. Like, find a little, find someone that looks the most like Tony.
Yeah, memorize all.
Like,
the
if someone had told me War Dog was related
yeah.
to Tony, I would have been like, "Holy crap!" Like,
yeah,
I'm an idiot for not seeing that.
Yeah, you could buy that. Yeah. You could sort of see it. The personalities, the look. It's like, yeah, he could be related to him. That's. Like, I like where we're going here.
If someone targeted Daniel, was like, "That's Devin's brother." Like, people would be like, "Oh my god."
I guess
gotta get him.
The one problem with this is, well, yeah, like most of the people on Survivor now they're fans of the show. They're watching
right.
every single episode
yeah.
outside of those six from Token Cheats. And and it's like, they're like, how do you know that? So they would have to be like, yeah, like Devin's saying, like, oh, the producer, he let it slip. Like, you know,
he told me.
Yeah. But seems a little far-fetched.
Rick,
but.
Did you have a story or a lie that you wanted to take out the island that you thought was too dumb to actually say out there when there were cameras?
I thought it was funny because all the way in, they were like, are you going to tell them what you do? Are you going to tell them you're a news anchor? I was like, yeah. I was like, what else would I talk about?
Yeah.
And they were like, you don't think they'll be – I don't know what they expect. Like, people were like, wow, he's a news anchor. Like, watch out for him.
I guess like you're
I like,
on
I think
TV,
as soon as I start
yeah.
talking, they're not going to be worried about me.
Yeah, there is a prestige around television
yeah.
for sure. Still,
yeah. yeah.
You were in a top 115 market at the time, I think.
Yeah, well, exactly. So there was nothing like that. I do remember in my pregame interview saying, if I ever get in a really bad situation, like, I'm just going to find someone who's by themselves in the woods and wait near them until someone else walks up, and then I'm going to start running away like we got caught. Oh. And I'm going to make this big thing. That's something I really wanted to do. But the situation just never presented itself. It's like I had idols or I had something else where it wasn't worth making it a he said, she said. And now I guess I can't do it next time either.
When you were hiding the fake immunity idols, which I'm so happy I watched that highlight. I was reminded of that. You did two of them. They both got found. They both got played. Of course, they weren't idols. And there's the one they're showing you. Like, you're like, you know, back in the bushes. Like, she found it. And like, I mean, was that like, were you really there watching her notice it? And you're like, I got her. I got her in the trap here. Like. But were you worried at all that she was going to see you? I forget who it was. Was that
It was Lauren.
Lauren, yeah. Excuse me.
Yeah. So I had, you know, they showed me going up in the tree in the middle of the night and getting the idol.
Yes.
But they didn't show one time when half the tribe was out on reward and Julie and Aurora were on the beach, me climbing up the tree as fast as I could and rehiding my fake idol.
Gotcha. Mm.
Right. Yeah.
And I did it initially not to have anyone find the fake. Like, I was really worried I was going to get to a spot. It was clear at this point I needed to win immunity or have an idol or I was out.
Yeah.
Like, there was no getting around it. So my backup plan was, if I don't win immunity or I don't have an idol, then right before it's time to go to tribal, I'm going to go, 1 second, I'm going to climb up the tree in front of people, pull the idol down, and then when we get to tribal, I'll show them the clue that said where it was, you know, that I couldn't fake, that had the painting in it. And that was going to be, you know, it's like, if you think I'm bluffing, risk your game on it. That was my last-ditch effort. Yeah.
Smart.
But anyway, I got to a point in the game where I knew I wouldn't need that because I had enough idols to get me to the end. So that's when I was just ready to burn everything down. I just wanted them to find it. So Lauren, more than anybody, Lauren's a totally great person, right? Like, she's a dentist. There's nothing bad, but we were on an island together for 38 days. We were adversarial a lot of the time. And like the last 3 weeks of the game, at least, everything I said, she just rolled her eyes. Oh. And like just the disdain, you know, for me rolled off her. And I was always in the minority. Like, she was coming after me the whole time. So when she found that idol, I did walk up and I saw her find it. And I was so happy. Like, looking back, it's like, oh, you jerk. But I was so happy. And then Chris walked up and I was like, Chris, you're not going to believe it. Come here. Like, all of that was totally legitimate. It was the best. And I actually, Lauren and I made up after the game, and we were good. And then at the live finale, like, we're all in the green room together and they show that scene for the first time. And I'm laughing.
Oh, that's funny.
And I've been dead to her ever since.
Wow.
How long did it take you to make those fake idols? Because they looked pretty intricate. And, like, you know, you're always talking about you can't be gone too long or people get suspicious. Though I guess at your point, it was like, well, Rick's out there looking for it anyway. So maybe you had time. Is that what was going on? Like, they looked really nice.
That's what happened. Well, the first idol I made was when I was panicking.
Yeah,
and it was after David had left, and it was actually inspired by David, because he was like, hey, that coffee lid, I think we could turn that into something, on one of the rewards that Kama had brought over.
Okay.
And so the only idol David and I had ever seen in the game at that point was the one that we each had half of.
Yep.
And it was like a really intricate, nice, like, fake jade carved, like, beautiful idol. So that's what I thought I had to make. So before I'm a big threat, like, I cut off the top of the jar, I paint it green in the middle of the night, I carve a Chinese symbol in it that I had gotten off the tea container, so it's a legit symbol. I do all this, and you look at it, and it's the worst thing you've ever seen. It looks like a coffee lid painted green. The crappy guy. Like, it's garbage. I still have it. I wish I had time to run and get it. But so I was like, oh, crap. Then I found my first idol, and it was such a piece of crap. I was like, yes! So it was going to be so much easier.
Yeah.
And then I made another really nice idol before I found my first one that was made of a shell. I got that one, too. And it had tons of beads. Then I found a crappy idol. And I went out in one afternoon and made, like, two of those. Easily, with stuff that I'd get. Because I'd get
arts and crafts.
The
idol factories. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll have to tweet at you guys pictures of my fake idols that I never use.
And so how long were those taking you? Like, a half hour, an hour, hours? Like,
yeah, the one with the coffee cup was the one where I couldn't sneak off at all. So that was, like, probably little segments of, like, 4 minutes, but it probably added up to, like, an hour and a half and still just garbage. And then the other one, the real intricate one, and when they show the flashback, when they're like, days earlier, Rick making his fake idols, they show me making my real fancy one that never gets played. That one took a long time. And then the other two were pretty quick, because it was one of those things where it's like, I gotta make them quick and crappy or it won't look right.
Right.
And again, like, I had an idol at that point. So I made it an exact copy. I was like, oh, there's a shell here. I'll put a shell here. There's coral here. It was like an identical. Like, I was real worried I was going to mix them up. And I'm sure production wouldn't even have known if I mixed them up. But I was trying to keep track of, like, four things in my bag, like a real idol, two fake idols, a fancier fake idol. That's why I wore my bag everywhere.
Oh, that's great. Now I'm just imagining Mike with like five idols, three of them fakes, two reals. He has no idea where any of them are.
People
are stumbling over them. Yeah. All right, here's another question. This one's from Kirk. Hello, No Buffs. I remember once hearing Boston Rob say something to the effect of, quote, "Let me give a tip to any future survivors out there. If you want to know who's aligned with who, see whom they sleep next to at night. Nobody's going to sleep next to the guy they want to vote out," end quote. I thought to myself, if I ever make it on Survivor, I'm going to use that tip. If you guys were to make it on Survivor, do you have any tips, strategies, or rules that you would follow going into the game? So they're asking us, people that have never been on the show, but we have somebody that was. So first off, yeah, any truth to the Boston Rob? Keep an eye on who's sort of sleeping beside each other, and then what other tips does maybe Rick Devens have?
It's funny because I think Boston Rob said that on season 39 when he was like the coach or whatever. Yeah. And so it was after I had played and I looked back and went, wow, he nailed it.
Wow.
I mean, it could not, now that people have heard it, maybe they'll change.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was so right about where people slept. My other advice for people going out is don't sleep in the shelter. Sleep on the sand around the fire. Huh. So much better.
Really?
Yeah. So much more comfortable than that bamboo. Oh, yeah. Like, I was on bamboo the whole first part of the game, and then at Edge, we didn't have a choice. And it was like, what have I been doing? So when I went back, I was definitely around the fire. Advice that I would...
Yeah, I
would say pay attention. They seat you at Tribal. You don't sit wherever you want. There's an order, and I would say pay attention. Because normally they, you know, this group, and the swing vote's in the middle. And it doesn't tell you... And you normally you know that.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty obvious, but it confirms what you're thinking. You're like, if it's not set up like that, you should be reevaluating. Like, what? Although I think they might be catching on to that, too. I think they'll switch that up because I think they're trying to put short people in the back now because short people and women were at a disadvantage because stuff was happening behind them. So I think Survivor's trying to mess with that.
Okay.
But if you go in Australia Survivor, it could not be more clear. Like, it is totally spelled out at Tribal.
Oh, there you go.
It's wild.
There's a tip for you Aussies out there going on Australian Survivor. I just heard Ethan in talking to Tyson on his podcast. He had what I sort of like took as a tip, even though he didn't sort of present it as such. He's like, when you go out there, you know, you're obviously, you're playing sort of against yourself. You're playing against your you know, tribe members, the other castaways. You're playing against the elements, like the island itself in terms of just surviving. But you're also playing against Jeff Probst and production in a way. And I think that sort of like goes to what you're speaking of, like emplacements and stuff like that. And what he meant by it was what was happening with Daniel just sort of like blabbing away and saying how he's like tight with Mike or they calmed him down, him and Chanel. And he's like, they're asking you quite like you can shoot yourself in the foot by answering questions that Probst is firing at you. And like if you can give Probst an answer without giving up any real, you know, tips of what's going on or like tells or stuff like that, then that's the way to do it. And I thought that was like, yeah, they are making a show here and they're going to steer you where they want to try and steer you, but you got to like give them just enough, but don't tip your hand, right?
He's basically cross-examining them
and
he wants you to mess up. Is that fair to say, Rick?
I don't know. I mean, I guess in a way they want you to mess up, but I don't think Jeff is ever trying to get you to mess up.
Okay.
But like the first time you go to Tribal, he tells you, listen, you can't not answer a question.
Right.
You know, you don't have to tell me the truth. You know, you don't have to blow up your game, but you have to give me something. This is a TV show. Like, this is part of it.
Right.
I understand that it's best for all of your game to not say anything. Can't do that. Right. So there are people like me who just, and Daniel, I guess, who just blab. I don't think I ever sunk my game, but I was pretty honest. Like, I used Tribal to my advantage when I could, and probably also put a target on myself in doing so. Mm-hmm. And then there are people like Christian and Aubrey and David Wright who are so good at these allegories and these metaphors. Yeah. And they'll give you this beautiful 30-second answer that's just nothing. And give you nothing, and that's enough for Jeff to move on. But you didn't give anything away. Where there was other people like Gavin, who's like, the second he lands in Tribal, all he wants is to be out, and for Jeff to not call on him, like, please. And so when Jeff does, it's like, the spotlight's on. It's not like his normal life. Like, he's trying not to give away much, but he knows he has to answer. And you can mess up. Gavin never really messed up, but other people have. So yeah, it's tough.
Is Tribal Council where you are most aware of the cameras on the show? Or
this is a really interesting thing that I really appreciate about U.S. Survivor. I don't know about the other ones. When you go to Tribal Council, it you are as much in that area as the TV viewer. Hmm. Like, they hide every single camera person in the dark and shadows. Huh. You do not see. I mean, you can tell.
Yeah.
You can see, like, the shine of a lens. But literally, the only person you see is Jeff until he goes to tally the votes. And then the two bodyguards come in to stand over you and make sure there's no talking or anything. You know? And those are the bodyguards that ride with you in boats and everywhere else to make sure you're not talking off camera. We love you, Jaden and Anna. So yeah, it's pretty amazing that you go in there, and I mean, you are in the tribal you've watched on TV all those years. There's not anything distracting you. The thought they put into it is amazing.
So even you, as a guy who works in television, I mean, how quickly do you forget that the cameras are there? I mean, I forget. I'm switching the cameras right now, and I'm barely aware that people are watching this right now. So I imagine that even when there's, like, you're opening a hidden immunity idol, you're just like, just they're just part of the scenery. It's just like a tree or shrubbery around you. Is that fair, or are you? Are you more playing to stuff?
I never forgot that they were there, but you develop such relationships with them mm-hmm. that it's just very symbiotic.
Right.
Like, I remember, it's funny that you bring up the immunity idol, because I remember the first, you know, the camera people on the first day, it's like, you don't want to be rude. So you're like, hey, or you're talking, and they'll stop you and be like, listen, no matter how nice you want to be or whatever, don't ever talk to us, because you're just screwing us up. You're screwing up our job. Like, if you need to say something, wait till we have to change our tape. Because every once in a while, you're in the middle of, like, a really intense conversation, and they're like, stop, stop! And they, like, change the tape as fast as they can get it in, and then, like, go. You know? But other times, you're just chilling, and they're like, oh, stop, stop. And they're changing the tape, and that's when you're like, so how are you guys doing?
Crazy weather last night. Hey?
You know? And then when you go to your interviews on the beach, it's like, hey, I can finally talk with you. Like, how's it going? You're from South Africa? That's amazing. So the first time I found my idol, I found it in that tree. You remember, I did that dance. And I was like, oh, my God. And I looked to the camera guy and I go, hey, I'm going to run to the other side of the island. And he grabs me and goes, stop talking to me. just do it. And I was like, okay, all right. I go. So it became like that. And then other times, because of my unique circumstances where I already had the idol, but I wanted to make them paranoid, so I'd go disappear.
Yep.
Like, I'd be walking and I have a camera team following me, and we'd run into a camera team that was resting, and they'd look like, what are you doing? Why didn't you warn us, you know, over the radio you were coming? And they'd be like, oh, I, you know, Devin's is looking for an idol, quote unquote. And the camera guy, one of them at one point just hit me and goes, you asshole. Like, it was great. And sometimes they had to hide with me in the bushes because, you know, if I go off without them, everyone knows I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
So they have to be a part of it. But if I'm hiding, they have to hide. You know, people talk about that time when I was hiding behind the log on the beach and the camera pans up. They're like, how did they not see the camera guy? And it's like the camera guys were disguising what they were doing as just like getting up or get, you know, they're always doing things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you really have to be symbiotic and kind of, you don't want to give, I've heard a lot of people say you don't want to give away what you're doing to production. Like, you want to keep it a secret, like they're after you. I had the exact opposite experience where it's like, if you want to put on a good show and good TV, like, it's a partnership.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If they're not there to see me do fun stuff, what's the point?
Yeah.
So I was really open with them about everything.
And what about...
here come the conspiracy theories.
What about confessionals? Is it just you and a producer and, like, maybe one cameraman or woman? Or is there a lot more people around? I always, like, what's that setup like? Is it just sort of one or two people? Or is there quite a bit of people because they're in, you know, television production?
The way they always set up their teams is one camera guy, one sound guy with a boom mic, because we're only ever mic'd up during challenges in tribal. You're never mic'd up at camp. And then there's like one kind of gopher guy who's like carrying a tripod or a big sandbag and just like doing whatever they need.
Right.
And it's really cool to see those guys, because that during the season you'll see them like, oh my God, they're letting him train on camera, and you're like, you're so proud of him. You know, you're like, I'm gonna give him something good. You know, like it's so great. There was one time Reem was sharpening a knife on a rock and it was making the worst sound ever. And I just got as close as I could to the mic, and I was like, you guys liking that? So it's fun. I forget your question. But
no. just the confessional setup. I mean, yeah. It sounds like a small team.
So it's those three people, and then one producer. There's like four different producers that will ask you questions.
Gotcha.
So one of them will be there.
Cool.
And they do block off that whole part of the island. Like, no one's allowed over there. So it's, you know, a loud talker like me is safe.
Right.
So they'll tell you that morning, like, we're doing stuff down here, you're not allowed.
And is it, I mean, does everybody sort of try and get the same amount of time with a producer? I mean, I imagine like you are going to talk more than a Gavin is probably going to talk in that situation. But then they, I don't know, is that come off like, wow, Devin's was there for 2 hours. I mean, they're loving him, I guess, you know.
It's funny because I think Survivor knows exactly what they're doing. Like, they try to make it as equitable as possible, even if it doesn't end up that way in the edit.
Yeah.
Out there, they are not trying to pull one person away more often than the other.
Right, right.
That, unless it's for something obvious. Like, I got pulled out more often because I'd win. You know, after you win, you're going to get pulled off because you won.
Right. Sure.
You know, after you played an idol, you're going to get pulled off that night because – you did something, you know, after coming back to tribal, no one wants to do any interviews. Everyone wants to go to bed.
Yeah.
But if you did something good at tribal or had something bad happen to you, like, you're doing an interview. I would even let them go first. Take Julie. I'll go. You can wake me up. Trying to gain good favor. Obviously, that didn't pay off.
That's amazing. All right. Well, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, we will wrap this up with Rick Devins, look ahead sort of to next week's Survivor, maybe get some final thoughts from Rick on this season so far, and make some predictions, so don't go anywhere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Whoa! Mac is back! You ever wish you could have it both ways? I do. Like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, or staying up late but not feeling exhausted in the morning. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But you can have it both ways with Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I've got some polos, some tees, some undies, and I love them. Simple, soft, stylish. In fact, I'm wearing Mack Weldon right now. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. If you told me my silver PK polo was made from 100% cotton, I would 100% believe you. But those antimicrobial silver threads keep me feeling fresher longer. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code NODUNKS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code NODUNKS.
All right, back here in the Classic Factory, start wrapping up this No Buffs episode. Rick, you'll be happy to know that Yves here in the live tribe, which is we call the people joining us live on YouTube, the live tribal. Yves says, I swing back and forth debating submitting an audition tape, but Devin's just made it sound like the most fun thing in the world. And he is going to do it. So there you go. And what's in your hand here?
This. All right. So I took advantage of the break since I described my idols. This is my bag.
Okay.
I just got it out of a box in the garage.
Looks crusty.
It's got all my... There's my dog tie.
Yeah.
From tribal. Got my chopsticks.
Nice.
From our Chinese food. reward. Here's the first idol I made.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep. It
looks like a coffee cup painted green. It
looks like a weird coaster.
You see the symbol on there? How bad? Just awful. So I improved a lot after that. This is the second one. I had it wrapped up in its fake stuff.
That looks legit.
Yeah.
I think the twine's not, you know, that's not how I found my idols, but that's okay. I'm trying to... Oh, this isn't even the idol. This was my idol. This is stuff I stole from our kit.
Oh.
To make more idols.
Oh, what are you going to make more later tonight with Fishback when you're playing Fortnite?
Where's my other one?
Oh, he's in his bag.
Oh, he really, okay, yeah.
I got so much crap in here still.
So they,
the
I mean...
Does it smell? Like, does it smell good? Does it bring back memories?
From an idol? Oh, it brings back memories. I have not cleaned this since I got back at all. Like, it's full of Fijian sand.
That's awesome.
I don't know where my other idol is, so false advertising.
That's
there.
Amazing.
But yeah.
I thought I had heard, like, you're not allowed to take a lot of stuff back anymore, that the production keeps it, but maybe your own stuff, I guess.
Dude, we had heard that, and... I would have taken a whole lot more stuff because they didn't check us at all.
Oh.
Like, there were people out there making stuff with the boot order painted on it. And like, David and I are looking at each other like, what a waste of time. They're never taking that. They took it home.
Wow.
They had it.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously they were responsible with it. But, yeah, I was really surprised. They didn't care at all.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Amazing.
Well, next week's episode, this is what we know. From the next time on Survivor, Marianne and Omer, they're angry with Jonathan, or Marianne is at least angry with him, and I think Omer calls him a slob. Is that what he says?
That's what
I
he
listened
said.
To it like three times. And I'm like, I think he called him a slob. Okay.
The odd couple funny. Strikes again.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see funny. If there's anything to that. Roxroy, back to being Dad Roxroy. You know, Romeo is saying, this guy, he's just all over us here at the Ica tribe, and he's basically just appears to be yelling at someone to blow on the fire.
Is that a solid tip, Rick? Don't be telling everybody what to do the first 2 weeks you're out there.
I think that's a very solid tip. Like, when we merged... All we heard from Kama was like, Aurora's been bossing us around. Now it turns out late in the game, like, Aurora's the only one keeping us alive. So thank God for Aurora. But yeah, no, I mean, you want to make an impression. Start telling people what to do.
Yeah, there's a tip. That's a good tip. Don't tell people what to do. And then finally for next week, Mike, I guess, confronts Daniel. He says, no kumbaya, just holy crapaya. I've never heard that. So I love Mike too. So maybe this is sort of the what I was saying before. Maybe we get Mike and Daniel coming to blows. Do you have any predictions for, let's say, next week, Rick, which I know is very difficult to call? And then just like, who do you like in this season to maybe win this whole thing or at least go very far? Who are you cheering for, I guess, at the very least?
I was a big Jenny fan, like you. I thought Jenny had a really good shot. I like Drea, but I don't think she's in a very good spot. She kind of played herself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Omer. I like a lot of them. My prediction going forward is that last night's tribal with Daniel and Chanel blowing up, I think both of them will recover.
Okay.
I think this is going to be a distant memory for both of them soon. That doesn't mean they won't find other trouble, but I think that they'll both recover from this.
Okay. You don't know any of the people out there personally, do you?
No. I have. I once played Fortnite with Lydia. That was wild.
Oh, nice.
Gavin was like, hey, we got someone from 41 who's going to play with us. I was like, okay. It was Lydia. She's wild. She's funny.
Did at any point during Fortnite, did she say, get over here, bitches?
Yeah. That personality shined through in a big way on Fortnite.
Okay, great. I think I heard Fishback say he knows Daniel.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, he does. So. We give him a lot of crap about it. Every time something happens to Daniel, we're like, oh, what's up with your buddy and his weak shoulders, Steven? Because we're very jealous, you know? Yeah. We want him all to ourselves.
You guys really do seem to have, like, this amazing Survivor community. Like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it feels that way as an outsider. Is that true?
It really is. And it's for someone who's, like, a lifelong fan of the show, it's a dream come true to have, like, these friends that are in Survivor. And my intro into it was – Wendell was visiting Atlanta. So this was before my season started to air, but I'd been on the preview. Mm-hmm. And I met he and Davey and Desi, and like they couldn't have been nicer.
Yeah.
They were so great. It was such a great representative, because it is like all these people that you think are villains, you know, people you didn't cheer for, you meet them and you're like, oh, right. They got on Survivor because they're so charismatic and like entertaining. It's a really cool thing. And usually when we all get together, like in a huge group, it's for the charity Give Kids the World or Hearts of Reality. So it's coming together for a good cause. So everyone's, you know, in good spirits, being their best, happy to see each other. Yeah. Your read on the community is 100% correct.
As a fan of the show, who did you most geek out to meet for the first time? We were like, oh my god, so and so.
Man, you know, I still haven't met Boston Rob.
Oh, okay.
But I would have been pretty over the moon about that. He was my favorite. I met Cochran at the finale and was going crazy about it. Sure. Although I would have gone crazier if I hadn't been such good friends with David, who knew Cochran, so it was less of a shock. Sandra was a big one,
yep,
for sure. I haven't gotten to meet Serene. Like, I'm really excited to meet her. Yeah. There's tons of people. Yeah. Rob Cesternino, huge. That was awesome.
Nice.
You're a season. You had four legends on the beach you. You had Aubrey. Was it Joe?
Yep.
David and Wentworth. Your season is like a super geek out for me, because I love all four of those players. And then the twist with Edge, which we have debated in this classic factory, are you playing the game while you're on Extinction, the Edge of Extinction? I say yes. But, it was just watching your season is just amazing. And watching the 20 minutes of your highlights, I mean, I'm geeking out. You're saying that you're geeking out, but when you're meeting these people, but I'm totally geeking out with you, man. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's happened, but are you the only person who, after getting eliminated, got a standing ovation from the jury as you're leaving? I mean, that was amazing. And then I watched your Ponderosa, and the reception that you got coming off the boat was incredible. I mean, like, you would have won. Like, you were the there's no way that you weren't going to lose that season. So,
and Chris knew that.
That was exactly the first question I asked coming down the dock at Ponderosa was I going to win? And they all said yes. Everyone was there except Lauren.
True.
No, it was amazing. And Victoria, who I love, like, our relationship out there wasn't shown as much as it was. Like, we have very much the same sense of humor.
Sure.
She was the one who started the clap. I'm really grateful. I mean, that took a lot of sting out of it.
Yeah.
It really did. Like, that was obviously a really rough night. But it felt really good. You know, even Chris, I was so mad at him, you know? But it's like, I love the guy. Otherwise, I would have sent him home a day earlier by not giving him the idol back, idiot. Devin. But no, it was so cool. And then at Ponderosa, I mean, they couldn't have been nicer. And I got to hug my boy Joey, who was one of the Fijian servers that we had met pre-game.
A feeling I know what your answer is, but what's your take on the being on Edge? You know, are you in your mind still playing? Is it actually an advantage? What do you think?
I think all credit to Chris for doing everything he could to win. Like, I'll tell you, you hear a lot of stories from Winners at War about people who went to Edge and did not make people love them. You know what I mean? Like, you spend time with people on Edge and you end up not liking them. So the fact that everyone loved Chris says that he was doing a great job out there.
Yeah. Right.
The reason I gave Gavin my vote is because it's not the game on the Edge. Like, I was on the Edge and I napped. I never napped in the game. It is really hard to stay in the game, whereas on the Edge, like, everyone who's ever gone there has stayed except two people. Three people.
Yeah.
So credit to Chris, he played the rules, but there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, the people on the jury wanted to legitimize their experience a little bit. They had nothing to be upset with Chris about. Mm-hmm. The people that were in the game longest voted for Gavin.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a good point.
Like all of them that were in the game longest voted for Gavin because we know how hard it was at the end.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, again, and, you know, Chris, no one's ever had an amazing ending like he had.
Yeah.
He played a perfect
And I love the guy. He did. You know, he's such a good dude.
Yeah. Well,
Gavin's my best friend, but
well, let's wrap this up with a prediction of my own, actually, and it sort of has something to do with you, Rick, because you are the master of finding hidden immunity idols. My prediction in 41, as everybody that knows that watches No Buffs, is was the game within the game was going to be in the game, and I ended up being right. So I'm 1-for-1 so far. My prediction this year, again, this is for you, Devins, is, and I think JD has a photo. I believe there's a hidden immunity idol in that ship wheel.
In the wheel?
Yeah. Right there in front of Jeff. And I say this because I know this is something that's happened before on Australia Survivor. We've seen Adam try and rip something off, you know, the podium there and say it was an idol. I'm just throwing it out here right now that I think we'll get a clue at some point and there'll be something with that weird little ship wheel sitting right in front of Jeff.
Why? Because it looks too movable?
Looks strange to me there.
Yeah, it's a little out of place.
Yeah. Lots of little pockets there.
Yep, for sure. And, you know, you could have some fun with the clue, I feel like, too. You know, sure. With whatever nautical theme you're going to come up with there. So I'm trying to call my shot again here.
Well, if you weren't completely right about the game within the game is in the game, I would throw this out right away. But
you can't. No.
I think you're right. I actually think this is going to happen.
Rick, tell the people that are obviously Survivor fans or No Buffs fans like how to like get in touch with you or follow you. What's the best way to do that?
Absolutely. I've been locked out of my Instagram for like over a year now. So if anyone can help me with that, I'd appreciate it because Instagram's not helping.
Okay.
But yeah, so follow me on Twitter, Rick_Devins.
Okay.
That's the best way.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Rick, for coming on. We really appreciate it. I know we kept you a little longer than we thought we would, but
guy's got to play Fortnite.
Well, he's got to play Fortnite with Fishback. He's got a new job that he should be getting rest for. I mean, he's got to make an idol because he's got his kid out now.
I know. That's what I'm getting into.
Yeah, but we can't thank you enough for coming on. We really appreciate it.
So much fun.
Yeah, this was great, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. Guys, we will see you next week for another edition of No Buffs. Plan is to hopefully get Wendell on, your boy. The guy made this very desk, so hopefully we'll have him on as we talk about episode 4. But until then, TK, why don't you put out our sexy St. Jeff candle. There it goes. And, the candle is spoken. We'll see you guys next week.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.